Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
This is Jack Hoffman. For nearly 31 years, Tico Steakhouse has been a staple for fine dining in Jackson, Mississippi. I would like to invite you to come experience our family tradition of our hospitality, sizzling steaks, and healthy poured beverages. Call today or stop in and experience Tico's in the second generation.
With locations in Ridgeland on County Line Road and now on the Square in Oxford.
You're listening to the Rebel Report podcast, where it's all Ole Miss all the time. Here's your host, Michael Borky.
All right, check. Welcome in. Glad to see you guys on this Thursday. It is Sunday. What is wrong with me? Doesn't matter. I should just, like, reset the entire thing, but we're already here. Let me know if you can hear me, by the way. My microphone was not working, essentially, so I did some things. This is an old microphone. It's like a 15-year-old microphone somewhere in there. So please let me know if it is if it's actually functioning or not. So just give me a thumbs up, thumbs down, and we can get going. So you can hear me, but is it through this, like, or is it through my computer? Either way. Glad you guys are here, though. Welcome in to this edition of the Rebel Report. My name is Michael Borky. Appreciate you being here on this Sunday night. The transfer portal is back. It is the dead period, I guess, is over. Bowl games are over. Teams are getting eliminated that are in the playoffs, and visits are starting again. And so it's ramping up a little bit. So we're going to talk about it. Ole Miss lost a pair of wide receivers to the transfer portal. What does it mean? We'll talk about that. And then also basketball and, of course, your comments on this edition of the show. Again, my name is Michael Borky. I appreciate you guys being here. And don't forget to subscribe, by the way, if you have not subscribed already. Wherever you get your podcast, just search Rebel Report, subscribe, and leave a rating and a review if you like what you hear anyway. And also, again, like this video, subscribe to this channel. Leave a comment as well, even if you're watching or listening after the fact. I would love to see what you think about what you heard tonight. And before we get into anything else, this edition of the podcast is presented by the Gregory Law Firm. DJ Gregory's in Fulton, Mississippi. He can service you anywhere in the state of Mississippi. Personal injury. So if you've been personally injured, do not waste another second. Wake up tomorrow morning if you're listening on Sunday night. But do not waste another second. If you have been personally injured and you think you might have a legal claim, 662-397-9799 is the phone number. 662-397-9799. Also, small business. If you're a small business owner, you need legal advice, or you want to start a small business, again, the number 662-397-9799. Don't delay. Call DJ today, the Gregory Law Firm, presenting the Rebel Report. So we'll start with the wide receivers that hit the portal. Aiden Williams, although there is some talk about him returning, even as late as last week, I guess, there was a line of thinking that he was going to come back, has gone ahead and put himself in the transfer portal, as has at least he hasn't shown up yet, I believe, but Noriel White put on Twitter that he will also be transferring away from Ole Miss. Those are two blue chip Mississippi wide receivers. White was just a freshman this season, and Williams just couldn't find his way on the field. There through injuries last year and this year, was just never able to was never given the opportunity, whether it be for whatever reason, I guess. That was a very poor way to describe it. But point being, Aiden Williams can never get on the field at Ole Miss, and Noriel White, if you're transferring for playing time, then why did you sign with Ole Miss in the first place would be my question. There was no way that a true freshman was going to get a lot of run on this Ole Miss team. I think it's more about what's next, and so let's talk about that. It's losing to, you know, blue chip wide receivers, albeit guys that didn't produce for the team itself really at all in any meaningful capacity. Why would something like that happen? What does it mean for 2025? I think it's as simple as they weren't going to play on 2025's team either. When you look at what Ole Miss has done in the transfer portal, on top of the fact that, you know, Caden Lee is returning, and they signed a five-star in the high school class, and also they got a four-star for good measure as well. But what they've done in the transfer portal, we've already talked about Deshaun Stribling, who is a guy that the more I think about it and the more I look at it, the more I think you guys should be really excited about his addition to this football team. The Oklahoma State transfer, again, he was almost a 1,000-yard receiver this year with pathetic quarterback play. I think he's a high-level player. And although the Big 12 is certainly a step up from the Conference USA, I have a feeling after really kind of looking at this guy a little bit that you might have a Trey Harris sort of – the fans don't really know much about him. Because remember when Trey Harris signed with Ole Miss, everybody was excited about Chris Marshall. Everybody was looking over here, right? It's, oh, wow, this guy from Texas A&M, he's legit. Trey Harris comes in, and he was the best receiver in that class and on the team. I would not be surprised if you had a similar phenomenon with Deshaun Stribling where the fan base at large doesn't know a whole lot about this guy or isn't really jacked up about this player the way I think that they will end up being once the ball gets snapped and he is playing within the offense. But, I mean, they've added him. They've added Caleb Odom. They've added Deuce Alexander, who's a guy from Wake Forest who's a burner as well. So when you look at what they have returning and how they utilize receivers, which is really not that many. They don't rotate receivers that much under Lane Kiffin anyway, but what they have returning, what they've added in the portal and what they've added in the high school class, that there's a real chance that neither one of those guys were going to factor into the offense much at all again to begin with. You are going to have a very hard time stacking years of meaningful depth in the transfer portal era, especially at a position like wide receiver. But the way they approach it, and you know, whether it's good or bad, they don't play many wide receivers, and they do portal wide receivers really well, and they have recruited high school receivers really well. Sometimes in this sport, players just get phased out. That's why I tell people all the time, don't fall in love with individual high school recruits, because there's like a 50-50 shot they even really play for you meaningfully anyway. And in the portal era, if they're not playing within the first 2 years, a lot of them don't stick around. So I frankly, you know, some people could accuse this of spin. I just, other than their recruiting pedigree, I can't quite think of why this is something that a very small segment of the fans, I think, were like overly upset about. I kind of couldn't understand some of the reaction to this. I mean, I even saw somebody say like, oh, this one really hurts. It's like, what does it hurt? How does it hurt? They are adding talent to the receiver room every year, and some guys just aren't going to factor in. That's college football. You sign – in the old days, you would sign 25 guys a year, and how many of them in great recruiting classes actually contributed to that? Not many. So that phenomenon is not new. In the portal era, it's even more frequent. So when they signed, it was a big deal because of their pedigree. But when you look at the receiver room, I just don't think they were going to factor in that much, if at all, for whatever reason. The next thing on that note, on the receiver note, is it's been blowing up on Twitter. I have been asked about it a good bit. I do think that this originated from the message boards. And, of course, Twitter sees the message boards and then makes things explode. And then I'm sure we'll get texted about it on the radio show a bunch tomorrow, like anytime some anonymous Twitter account puts a Quinshon Judkins gif out there to, stuff like that. Get asked about that all the time. But two things. One, just because it's on a message board doesn't mean you should immediately dismiss it. Sometimes, often even, there are very connected people that hear things that do post on message boards. Skepticism should be met with everything that comes anonymously, just like what we talked about, I mean, almost this time last year when Quinshon Judkins and Ole Miss broke up and there was this, well, he wants to come back, he's going to come back, and that was never realistic, that was never a thing. When it comes to Juice Wells and the question of can he or is he going to return to Ole Miss? My answer is I don't know, because I have asked about it. Because it makes sense. It would make sense, I believe, for him to return to college and play another year as opposed to try after the season that he had to go to the NFL. A return for him makes sense. And so it was worth exploring. Fully transparent, I could not get anywhere. It doesn't mean it's not true. I tell you guys all the time, you should meet anything anonymous with skepticism when it comes to stuff like this. But that makes a lot of sense to me. And I one of my buddies that asked me about it was like, no way in hell. Like, why would you ever want him back? He was so bad this year. And, you know, what's crazy is he caught 550 yards worth of passes and 20 yards per reception and 6 touchdowns. It's a pretty darn good season. But, yes, he did underwhelm. He did underachieve. There were drops. There were a couple of times where better effort could have led to an opportunity for big catches. I understand those things. People labeled him as a bust, and I understand why. I don't think, as we talked about 100 times during the season, that he was utilized correctly. And by the way, I'm clickbaiting the hell out of this. The thumbnail is clickbait. I was told recently that I need to spend more time doing clickbait. They worded it differently, but I just kind of, I feel kind of gross doing it even now. But it makes sense. I don't think they utilized him correctly. I don't think he's a win 2-on-1 deep ball type receiver guy. I think he is what you saw in the bowl game. It's get the ball to him quickly and in space. He's got elite breakaway speed. You saw it even in the South Carolina game, right? He ran away from that defense, which is a good South Carolina defense. I know that Duke team had some opt-outs on offense, but that was the ACC's best defensive team, and he just completely ran away from them. I think Ole Miss could have stood to utilize him in the same way the 49ers use Deebo Samuel. And I think they really they did not maximize his skill set. I think they used him wrong. And also he was battling injury. But if a guy like Juice Wells was in the portal having 550 yards receiving and 6 touchdowns this season on 20 yards per reception and over 3,000 career yards – Ole Miss fans would be through the roof. Go get him. Go get him. Pay him whatever. Go get him. That guy's already on your roster. Guys with his experience and his talent level don't hit the portal very often. They are not available players very often. And so I don't know if it's real or not. I don't know if it's just message board rumor or not. It does make sense. If I were Ole Miss, I would try to do it. Now, I don't know if I would pay him top dollar or anything like that to return. But if he is open to a return on a deal that makes sense for Ole Miss economically, that's something that I would welcome. If I were Lane Kiffin and Charlie Weiss and you guys, the fans that are paying their salaries, I think that that would be a good addition. Again, he's got over 3,000 receiving yards. Go watch some of his tape pre-injury at South Carolina and the way they used him in what his skill set is. Watch his highlights from this season. I know there were a lot of downsides. I know that. But a guy like that and his skill set can help this team in 2025. He can be better. He has been better. He flashed. Guys like him don't come around very much. If that's a real thing, which I don't know if it is or not, make that happen. I would make that happen. And he would be very useful for that team if they use him correctly in 2025. You see, with the correct opportunity, what his skill set can translate to. Big time explosive plays. Use him right, and you got something there. Finally, before we get to your comments, the basketball game. I know we did a quick video yesterday, and if you haven't listened to it, go check that out. But I the more I think about it, the more, like we talked about yesterday, I am encouraged by their win because of what they did offensively. The phrase I kept using yesterday was the ball stuck too much. I don't think ball movement was particularly good. Movement without the basketball, I don't think was good. There were too many possessions where one or two guys would dribble out the shot clock almost entirely before they would get a contested shot up. It wasn't a pretty effort offensively, and they're too good at guard really across the board. to look like that offensively. And they won a game in which they did not shoot well, and Padula and Murray combined for 10 points, and they won that game. That is a very encouraging thing. They won the rebounding battle after getting kind of bullied in that category for a period of time in the first half. They ended up winning the rebounding battle. Their defensive activity was really good. Georgia was a top 10 efficient offense in college basketball, and they had their worst shooting splits of the season, I believe. So that the more you think about that game, the more you should feel good about it. Now, Arkansas on Wednesday night is going to be tough. Bud Walton's tough. Going on the road in this conference is tough. But I think you should be encouraged by the fact that they won by double digits on a day in which they didn't play well. But defensive activity, second half rebounding, and then clutch possessions from Morrell and Brakefield, that was good. You should be very encouraged by all that. But the rest of my thoughts, I'm sure you guys might comment on it as well, but can be found in yesterday's recording. So we'll continue on with your comments after I tell you the podcast is brought to you in part by Advantage Business Systems. Check them out online, absms.com. Advantage Business Systems has you covered for all of your Mississippi office technology needs. Tell them I sent you, get a complimentary office technology assessment. So you tell them what you need and what your budget is, and they will find a solution for you on me. That's Advantage Business Systems, absms.com. The podcast is also brought to you by Priority One Bank. They make you their priority. They got 16 locations here in Mississippi. They also have local loan servicing and decision-making, by the way, so you don't need to get on Zoom or talk to somebody out of state if you want a loan with Priority One Bank. It's somebody that will sit down with you face-to-face, and they will get to know you. And it's simply because Priority One Bank makes you their priority. All right. So glad you guys can hear me. We can hear you. Good. Glad to hear it. State fan here. State looks like a top 10 team right now, but they have a tricky game with Vandy and an ultimate look-ahead spot on Tuesday. State is – they can win in so many different ways. They are possibly, despite their net, the most underrated team in college basketball right now. Quite a lot of these recent high-rated Mississippi recruits at wide receiver have either not played or have left altogether for both Ole Miss and Mississippi State. Williams, White, Harrell, and Burnside never contributed. Three of them left. Yeah. I don't know the issue. I don't know if it's preparedness. I don't know if it's a lack of intricacy. I don't know. I don't know what the issue is, but there's clearly an issue. Aiden Williams is supposedly visiting state this week and possibly as soon as tomorrow. Interesting. I mean, he's clearly talented. I would have questions as to when Trey Harris gets hurt, for example, he is unable to get on the field. Even Wells was dealing with injuries. Watkins was dealing with, Ole Miss had injury issues over the last couple of years at wide receiver, and he couldn't get on the field, and you have to ask yourself why that is. Maybe it was coaching malpractice. I don't know, but there you have to wonder why couldn't you get on the field when the guys in front of you were repeatedly getting hurt. You know, there are different receivers, but last year when you saw Caden Lee spring into the scene, you thought it was over for Aiden Williams. It was about getting on the field first, and he never did. And Caden Lee, I mean, maybe I'm sure he does. I don't watch film, but it feels like Caden Lee always knows what he's supposed to do. You know what I mean? No drops. He's always in the right spot. He could stand to bulk up just a little bit because his blocking leaves a little bit to be desired. His size contributes to that some, but he's reliable. And especially for Lane Kiffin, reliability when it comes to, just simply knowing what you're supposed to do on a given play is apparent with wide receivers. He doesn't trust many, which also makes you wonder why Juice was given so many opportunities because of the drops and stuff this year. But hey, anyway. So let's say Wells returns. Your top three guys are Lee, Stribling, and Wells, with Wright starting at tight end. The fourth wide receiver would be a question, but the way they play guys, it won't automatically be Cunningham. Yeah, like if that actually comes to fruition, I mean, don't you love your trio of wide receivers? And yes, I think Wright would be your starter over Haz at tight end, but you would in theory play both of them. Yeah, I don't think it's automatic that Cunningham plays right away. And you know, what do they do with Odom? And what do they do with – I think Alexander is going to be more of a reserve type maybe, but he caught – as a true freshman, caught 400 yards worth of passes. So, you know, certainly a capable guy, I suppose. But I think when you look at the room, if this rumor becomes true, which now that I've said it and talked about it, it's not going to happen. So he'll announce something tomorrow. I know he said that he was going to play in some Shrine game or whatever, but it'll be like guaranteed tomorrow that like there's no way it's possible. But anyway, need something to talk about this time of year. Mississippi Kids is why, and Juice Wells sucks. Yeah, I wouldn't go that far. I think he had an inconsistency issue this season. I think he was battling injury. Certainly was not what he could have been, but a guy with 3,000 receiving yards at the college level certainly does not suck. I think he had a bad year, but if you can't see the talent and the upside and the physical ability, then he has a catching problem, but at the same time, they were very rarely used, or they very rarely used how we said he plays best. His touchdown versus Duke was exactly how he should be used, 100%. Was this South Carolina team fool's gold? You know, they lost a lot, but they didn't really recruit the portal well and didn't replace anyone. What is the long-term outlook for Lamont Paris? Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if fool's gold is really the right answer even. I mean, there's a chance they're just kind of at the bottom of the SEC with LSU. Oh, gosh, I'm so sorry. Last year's South Carolina team, you said. I thought you were talking about this one. I don't know. I mean, there's volatility in the league, right? I mean, Missouri was just awful last year, and look at them now, so. Oddly enough, the only game in SEC play they used him best was South Carolina. Go figure. Easily the worst moment for him this year was the one-hand effort against Florida. Gosh, I know. That was so bad, man. He should move to running back. Should line him up in the backfield some. Didn't get to hop in here after the Gator Bowl, but after the Gator Bowl, I can't talk tonight, fellas. Sorry. But how do you think the offensive staff handled that game? Also, Jackson Dart was awesome. He had some throws that can make him shoot up draft boards. Charlie Weiss Jr. called a great game. It was a kind of like what should have been type game with Bentley and his usage and getting the tight ends involved in quick passes, you know, the one to Juice, but it wasn't just Juice, right? They got the ball to Dart's hands quickly, especially when you could kind of tell that the offensive line was going to struggle a little bit. They called a great game, and Dart was exceptional. And what people have learned, or at least should have learned through this exercise, by the way, is NFL people, including like the scouts, don't watch much college football. They just don't, because there was a lot of, whoa, who's this Dart kid? Or, wow, Dart is special, that kind of stuff during the Gator Bowl. It's a three-year starter in the SEC, and you got more Dart buzz during the Gator Bowl than basically any other time. Here's what Jackson's going to do. He is, one, he doesn't have the strongest arm, and he won't have the strongest arm in this draft, but it's not weak. It's not like he's got a noodle arm either. He's big enough. He's a good enough athlete, and his arm is good enough to where somebody will take a chance on him, especially in this quarterback class. It's pretty weak in the second to third round. Mel Kiper jumping him up to number three surprised me a little bit. I mean, if he's number three, then there's a chance he's a first-round pick. I don't think that's going to happen. I would love to be wrong, but I don't think so. But what he's going to do is he's going to test well. And I don't necessarily mean like combine test well. I mean, he's going to interview well. When the scouts, which by the way, they do thorough analysis of these players, that they go to the towns and they talk to people around town. I heard a story from somebody in scouting once where they were talking about a quarterback and they went to the college town and just went to a handful of bars and stores and were like, hey, you ever interacted with X player? Tell me what it was like. Just like random people. They were trying to figure out how the player treated bartenders, how the player treated people that worked at a store. They talked to the staff members at the facility, the custodians. They talked to those people. They really make it a point. They do that like around pro days and stuff as well. They'll walk around the facility and find, you know, a custodian and say, hey, you ever interacted with, they'll do it for darts. So here's an example. They'll walk up to a custodian during darts pro day and say, hey, you ever interact with Jackson Dart? What's he like? Is he nice to you? Is he good to you? He will test well that way. The stuff that, the intangible stuff they're really going to like. And so when you've got a pretty weak quarterback class and a guy that has the experience that he has paired with his age, don't forget he's young. He's very young for his experience level. There's a lot to like about Jackson Dart. He would fit, in a place like LA. I guess Detroit would be a really good fit. If Hendon Hooker wasn't there, that would be a good one. Maybe Pittsburgh. I think his game, the way he plays, fits a place like Pittsburgh a lot. Somebody's going to take a chance on him because the physical ability's there. There's questions about, you know, reading the field. At times, like at the end of the Florida game, he can just kind of vomit all over himself. But if you're looking for a perfect prospect, when's the last one? You know, there's not many. So he's going to get an opportunity for sure. And I still, like you, stand by the inexcusable Bentley situation. They would have won at least one of those three games with him in. Yeah, Dart went from 7-3 on Mel Kiper's board. I've seen a lot of quotes from, you know, the anonymous quotes from GMs and stuff about him that all favor him. On basketball, I liked the activity on defense and how they ended up getting some valuable contributions from Morrell and especially Brakefield, but they got to play better offensively. Georgia shot 29%. They did. Georgia shot 29% in part because Ole Miss forced them to shoot 29%. But, Padula and Murray have got to help them more than they did on Saturday. But the fact that they won without their help is good. Why spend time recruiting 4 and 5 stars if you aren't going to give them a chance and they're going to hit the portal? Or are their agents just finding the next highest bidders? In a perfect world, they would love to keep all of the players that they recruit. That's just not reality anymore. Some of them don't work out. I mean, 5 stars are the most successful recruits, right? 5 stars are the most successful. Only 50% of them get drafted. 4 stars are only at a 20% rate, and 3 stars are at a 5% rate, generally speaking. So 5 stars are a toss-up as a prospect. So that's why you sign recruiting classes in the 20s every year for a roster that at the time, anyway, I know this has changed some, but you're signing 25 guys a year out of high school for a roster that has 85 players on it. Like, you're already building in processing players out to begin with. You spend time recruiting 4 and 5 stars because a lot of them can help you. And so the ones that don't in this era, they leave. These guys would have stuck around, I guess, but they still wouldn't have played much. The portal just gives them an opportunity to go. I don't think it's a financial situation with them. It's a they're not going to play situation. You don't bat 1,000 in evaluations. And, I mean, it's a two-way street, right? If they're not going to play, they hit the portal. And also, if Ole Miss has receivers that they recruited out of high school that just aren't going to help them much, they go to the portal to get guys that are taking the spot that they hoped these players would fill. I mean, Ole Miss's starting defensive tackle next year is going to be a high school guy. They developed him, and he's going to play. Ole Miss's starting slot receiver is going to be a high school guy. He came in, and he was a hit. Caden Lee was a hit. He wasn't overly highly recruited either. Wasn't the blue chip guy, but you recruit high school to get guys like Caden Lee, to get guys like Xavier Harris. You recruit the portal to get guys like Trey Harris and Jordan Watkins. Arkansas got absolutely bulldozed by Tennessee on the boards. I haven't watched too much of the Hogs, but perhaps Ole Miss can have some success on the glass too. Ole Miss can be a decent rebounding team. They did well in San Diego with BYU and Purdue. They out-rebounded Georgia, albeit barely. But, I mean, especially Dia, when he's I don't want to question a player's motivation. If they could get 30 minutes of those five-minute stretches that he goes on where he looks dominant, they've really got something. They can be a better rebounding basketball team than they are, because they've shown it. But we'll see Wednesday night. LSU's at home, definitely got to have it for Ole Miss, but if they go 2-0 this week, I think we're comfortably talking about tournament down the road. Absolutely. Hell, I think, I mean, if they're 2-1 after these next two, then they're in very good shape. I know the schedule gets really tough, but they're in good shape. Winning home games is going to take them a long way if they can do it. And I know they've got tough ones coming up, don't get me wrong, but the path to the tournament does not have to go through Bud Walton. Arkansas fans are already mad at Calipari. Who could have seen that coming? It's almost like they hired a guy that was at a better job in their own league whose fans wanted to change and expected it to be better. Why would they try four at running back instead of Juice? Makes no sense. And yeah, Micah Davis off to somewhere. I don't know, but he did hit the portal. So the Titans now have the number one pick, and I know they'll find a way to screw it up. I mean, they're taking a quarterback, right? This is not, I mean, I know everybody's in love with Shador and Cam Ward. I'm not in love with any. If I were the number one pick, I would be very scared of this quarterback class, all of them. I'd be scared of them all. But South Carolina gets Alabama and Auburn at home after getting beat down by State. They could be 0-6 in the SEC when State plays them again. Oh, my gosh. I have not looked that far ahead at South Carolina's schedule, so I'll take your word for it on that being right. But, geez, that's not good. If Juice comes back, they need to have him running quick slants. Fighting for deep balls isn't his forte. No. No, it is not. There's no way you can tell me that Dart is worse than Jalen Milrow, Carson Beck, and Quinn Ewers. Todd McShay has him seventh best behind the Indiana guy, Curtis Rourick. Yeah. Quinn Ewers was actually really good at the end of their playoff game, but what about Carson Beck? We'll just use him for an example. What about Carson Beck's game tells you that he is better at playing the quarterback position than Jackson Dart? Jalen Milrow's at least super athletic, right? He's a high-level athlete. Was pretty awful throwing the football this season, though. I've been on that for 2 years. Never been impressed with Jalen Milrow at all, but I mean, isn't Ewers going to stay in college anyway? But I would also stay away from Cam Ward. Seems like a selfish and reckless player. I would, too. Miller has the most upside because of athletic ability, but right now Dart is more NFL-ready than any of them at 21 years old as well. think the Dolphins getting Dark could be cool. Yeah, do you see Tyreek Hill he's wanting out or said that he's out? Lee is back. The only players that couldn't see the field are leaving. Yep. What's Jackson Dart's football career looking like in 5 years? Does it exist? And if it does, what does it look like? If I had to bet on it, I think that Jackson Dart is a backup in the NFL in 5 years. I think he is, because like the off the field stuff is what keeps guys like him in the league for a long time. When you look at backups in the NFL, they have a lot of things in common. They're good team guys. That's what keeps them around. They're not going to screw things up on the field if they have to play, and they're good team guys. Like Nick Mullins, for example, from Southern Miss. He is not the tallest. He doesn't have the strongest arm. He's not the best quarterback or anywhere close, and he's started some games after guys get hurt, and he's never done enough to keep a job as a starter because he's not good enough to be a starter. But he doesn't screw things up, and he's a team guy, and so he stays around forever. That's what I think Jackson Dart's football career is going to be. I would love to be wrong. I would love for him to be a starter and start for 15 years and win a Super Bowl. But what I think is going to happen is he will be a guy that people want around the locker room, and he's got the physical ability of a guy that, when he goes in, you don't have, forgive my language, earmuffs. If you have kids in the car, oh shit, we got to play him like Nathan Peterman. There's not that. That's what I think his future is, which is a very nice and lucrative future. How about Jane Rashada hitting the portal again? What a roller coaster it's been for him. Not sure what George is going to do at quarterback. Frankly, what a joke that all is. The whole situation there is an absolute joke. It's a joke for Florida for offering him money they didn't have. Him bouncing around is a joke. Obviously wasn't going to win the job at Arizona State. But bouncing around like this is a joke. Suing Florida, everybody, it's all bad. Ole Miss just needs to find a way to 8 league wins, 9 seals it, 8 gives them a chance. I think 8 guarantees it. I mean, that's what every metric, everything points to. 8, you're solidly in with this league schedule. So we'll see. 9 will absolutely guarantee it beyond measure. Like, you could be like a 5 seed at 9. Can't remember if we said anything about it or not, but what are your thoughts on Alabama, Kalen DeBoer, and Jalen Milroe? You expect them to portal a quarterback. I expect them to portal a quarterback as well. I can't quite figure it out because I know the easy answer would be, oh, they're a disaster. Saban's gone, and they're going to suck forever. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think DeBoer is good, and I think he's going to figure it out. But the timing of Nick Saban's retirement could not have been worse for Alabama football. If this was 10 years ago, this Alabama team would have been really, really good. Really good. Would have made the playoff had it been a 12-team 10 years ago. You're following me. At least I think you are. But when Saban left, a bunch of players left. Really good players. High-level players. Imagine if Trey Amos was on this Alabama team. Imagine if Caleb Downs is on this Alabama team, and on and on and on. They had a lot of guys leave, didn't have the depth. Alabama without Nick Saban is what every other program in the SEC is. They have a nice stadium. They have good fans. They have all this stuff. But that's all. I mean, they are just like everybody else. Absent Nick Saban, Alabama is LSU. Alabama is Tennessee and Georgia and Florida and everybody else. And also Alabama, I have heard, and you don't need, and I have heard, their athletic director going on a media tour begging and pleading people for money for NIL tells you that they're behind. And so they're behind. And without Saban, they're just like everybody else. they're going to have seasons in which they go 9-4. And that's their new normal, even with a very, very, very good coach like Kalen DeBoer. I think he's good. I think he'll make the playoff, maybe even next year. I don't think they're going to be patient enough with him and understanding their new reality of they are just like everybody else now. Alabama didn't win because of Nick Saban. Nick Saban won at Alabama. There's a difference. Wait. Let me just scratch that. I don't know if that came out correctly. Alabama didn't win because of Alabama. Alabama won because Nick Saban was at Alabama. There we go. That's why they won at the level that they did. They think that that is what their normal should be. That is not normal. And that's never what their normal will be again, especially in this era. If you're the Titans, you'd pick Travis Hunter and try to sign Sam Darnold from the Vikings. They cut Cousins last year to get younger and pay less. I don't see the Vikings paying Darnold. I think they would be nuts not to. They would be absolutely nuts not to. And they might. I mean, I don't think you're wrong in thinking that, but they would be nuts not to. Darnold's your starter. It works well with your coach, who, by the way, is coming up on the last year of his contract, and teams might try to trade for him. Please, God, Saints, go do that. But that would be a very bad decision on the Vikings' part. They got it right. You've got your quarterback, build around him, and you can win. You have no idea what J.J. McCarthy is capable of. It's a huge risk to go with him instead of Darnold at this point. So the five things you listed out for the football program to do to sustain momentum: win the Egg Bowl, good high school class, portal well, have good retention, and win the bowl easily. They have accomplished 4 of 5 so far. Yeah. And look, the visits are picking up a little bit. They have a handful of scheduled, anyway, high-profile visitors expected to come in. And if that actually happens, then there you go. The disappointment is still glaring, but you think there's still a sense of optimism and hype in the fan base for 2025 and beyond. Absolutely. Are we worried about locking down Austin Simmons? Seems to have a lot of upside, yet flying under the radar in the SEC. You don't have to worry about that at all. Not one bit. No, that's all good. If you had told me the team would be 8-3 after the Florida game, I think after that, they did about as well as you could have hoped to try and right the ship metaphorically. Yeah, they held together. They stayed together. And this is what I talked about, too, after the game and on the radio show some. Because it's easy to point to, well, they just had the Grove Collective contracts, and that's why they played in the game. Sure. And going into it, it makes sense, right? That's not how they approached the game, though. That's not how they played the game. According to Kiffin, he went up to Walter Nolan at halftime and said, hey, you know, you can sit if you want. Like, you've done enough. Thank you. And Walter Nolan kept playing. There was a moment late in the second half where they had all the reserves in on defense, and it was 4th and short, and Duke was going for it. And you see Jared Ivey and J.J. Pegues, like, run up behind Kiffin holding their helmets saying, coach, like, can I go? This is late in the game. These are guys that are going to be in the NFL soon. Jared Ivey in particular could play himself into like a second-round pick. There's millions waiting for both of those guys at least in that moment. And late in the game on 4th down, and they're winning by a billion points, they run up to their coach like, hey, put me back. Like, can I go? Can I go play? And Kiffin was like, yeah, sure, go. What the hell? And they ran on the field, and they actually didn't get the stop. But that's not Grove Collective contracts and just doing enough to get your final payment. That's not what that is. That's not what that is at all. That's culture. That's character. They showed culture and character in that game. And did they come up short? Of course. But should you, as a fan of that team, at least feel something about that moment? I think so. I think that speaks to the team, the guys that you had in that team. And guys like that are easier to root for, right? And so when a guy like Jared Ivey, who you watched in a meaningless bowl game, grab his helmet when they're winning by a bunch, running up to his coach saying, coach, put me back in because I don't want them to get another first down. I don't care about my future. I don't care about millions of dollars that are waiting for me. I already satisfied enough to get my last Grove Collective check. Coach, I don't want Ole Miss to get scored on right here. Put me back in the game. That means something. That tells you that Jared Ivey's a guy that you should root for the rest of his career, and it's a character thing. I was very impressed by the way that they played and the way that they handled that game. Did they try to run it up late? Should they have shut it down a little bit more? Probably. Yeah, probably. But I would rather them not shut it down and show that than the inverse. So, how is State number 7 in the portal with 2 4 stars? It's because of the volume of players. They have a high level of high number of players in the transfer portal. That is why. Wait, are they number? I'm looking at On3 right now, which On3 also factors in players leaving. They're at 28 in On3, but yeah, they have 19 commitments. That's partially why. Ole Miss has 17 though. But fun fact, Ole Miss won more games than Alabama for the first time since 2003. I did not know that. Holy crap! Wow. Well, at least I know what Ole Miss normal is, not winning an SEC or Natty Roll Tide. Well, Ole Miss is closer to both of those things than Alabama is at the present, so there's your truth bomb of the day. Awesome with the super chat. Thank you, man. Thank you. Totally unnecessary, but I appreciate you for sure. Thank you. With the Sark to the NFL noise, could you see UT wanting Lane? How concerned should we be about that if Sark leaves? That's an interesting one because that's one of those jobs. That's one of those jobs in college football, right? It's one of those. Florida's not one of those. We talked about that. Auburn is not one of those. He turned down Auburn. Texas is one of those. So then it will become a – if they even decide to go down that road, if Texas does, it would be how much is the newfound family life holding him to Oxford? It's clear that that impacted one decision, and now it's even more than just that. I don't really like discussing people's personal lives like that, but, I mean, he's been public about it, so I think it kind of leads you to be able to do that. His family coming back to him in Oxford is not nothing. And I don't know if that's something that you'd be willing to. I'm not in his shoes, but if I was in his shoes, would I be willing to up and walk away from that after getting all of that back? I don't think that answer is yes, regardless of where it is, you know. That, talking about the bowl game, says a lot about how much the guys loved Ole Miss and the checks they'd get if they played in the game. Yeah, true. You can love them both. You can love the money that you got paid and also the school that paid you the money. It's the damnedest thing. When people think that money corrupts athletes, ask Cam Jordan what he feels about the city of New Orleans sometime. He only lived in New Orleans because it was his job and he got paid to be there. But if he retires after the season, which he might, wait until you hear his Hall of Fame speech when he talks about New Orleans. You can love a place that's also paying you to be there. That can be true. So this idea that, well, they're just all of them are mercenaries, that's crap. In their effort in the bowl game, it's not like this everywhere, but the way Ole Miss's players played in the bowl game, the way they handled that tells you that they're not just mercenaries, that they're not just in it for the money, that you can actually, in 1 year, fall in love with the school. You can love it. How many of you, when you went to college, after 4 months at your college, were you hooked on it forever? How many of you? Why can't they experience the same thing while also drawing a paycheck? I've never liked that criticism because, yes, it applies to some, but not all. Not anywhere close to all. Really looking forward to the young guys on the defensive line. Had a Cam Franklin sighting pretty quick, and he looked twitchy, didn't he? He did. And they have a great veteran returning with Perkins to anchor them. Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, Perkins and Xavier Harris in the middle, I don't know much about Echols, but apparently they really like him, and he played some. Franklin certainly looks the part. They've got some pieces on the defensive line returning, and I know they've added a couple in the portal, and I would venture to guess that they're going to add at least one more, but we'll see. You love Ivy. He's awesome, man. He's really good dude, it seems. The glue that held the defense together the last 3 years, nobody played with more raw heart and determination than Ivy. Yeah. Next season, you'd like to see a consistent performance, good team, but was not consistent at times, and Kiffin should learn from his mistakes. That is the next step, right? Random question. Why does the LSU-Ole Miss rivalry not get the national recognition it deserves? It typically is a big game, and they've played each other over 100 times. Because LSU has a higher profile rivalry with a program that has recently won championships. I mean, it's really that simple. If you know college football, like if you're a college football guy, you know Ole Miss and LSU is an intense rivalry. But it doesn't get the national pub because LSU has a game with Alabama also. So think Echols is going to get a lot of time this upcoming year? Yes, absolutely yes. LSU doesn't consider it a high-level rivalry, even though they rush the field every time they beat Ole Miss in Tiger Stadium. I know, right? You can't say it's not your rival when you rush the field multiple times after you beat them. It's game over at that point. What should the Saints do with the top 10 pick now? Oh, gosh. You have to get younger. I don't like any of these quarterbacks at all. Rattler showed you some things that I like. I mean, Spencer Rattler played these last few weeks behind a bad offensive line who was injured anyway, without Alvin Kamara, without his top two wide receivers, and without Taysom Hill. He was throwing to a bunch of UFL guys as a rookie behind a not good offensive line with an interim head coach, and he did really nice things. I think next year you kind of have to just roll with Carr and Rattler, and you have to get younger. Defensive line, I think they have to get an edge. Although Chase Young is somebody that – or not even just an edge. They need to get defensive line help. Brzee I like, but they need to get younger there. That's where I would start first. Lines of scrimmage, getting younger, because they're very old. Cam Jordan plays too much at his age. Although he had a good year, he plays too much at his age. Demario Davis eventually is going to not be able to help you much anymore. You've still got bad issues on the offensive line. That's where they need to draft, I think. If Texas comes after Kiffin, let him go. I think it would be not in Ole Miss's best interest to just let Lane go. But I don't think you're naive, Cal, when you say that you think Kiffin is dug in and wants to make a statement at Ole Miss. I don't think you're naive at all. The only knock on Dart is sometimes he doesn't see the whole field and will lock in on one receiver and may not have that Eli clutch gene. Intangibles and overall ability is excellent. It's fair criticism. It's fair. There is most definitely not a perfect prospect in this draft. Definitely not. Fun fact, Marcus Freeman has a bigger win than Brian Kelly in his entire coaching career. Yeah, and Marcus Freeman did it in the state of Louisiana, which is even funnier. LSU's getting exactly who they paid for. They are getting exactly who they paid for. This is what they should have expected. Where's Derek Carr next season? I think I think it's New Orleans. I think he'll be the Saints starter next year. I really do. Do you try trading the pick to get multiple picks here? That's a good question. Yes, I would. I mean, Hunter, you know this. They're old. The Saints are very old. They need to get young. How do you get young? Draft picks, right? They need to get younger and cheaper. Even Taysom is old, but they're old. And they have cap issues, and they shouldn't continue to do what they've done with the cap as they're trying to get younger. Their window has closed. It's time to open up a new window. If you can get another first, you can trade back and get another one. Don't hate that idea. Don't hate that at all. I know you don't like it for a rival team, but Michael Penix looks really good. Yeah, the Falcons will screw him up, though. They'll screw him up eventually. Tampa needs to have the cream jerseys of primary. It's beautiful, isn't it? The Panthers look good today. I know you don't care for that, but Bryce Young is starting to look like he's coming into park. Crazy games in the NFC South today. The division's getting better, and I don't like it. Yeah. Freeman also has the worst loss in program history in the same year, but yeah, look at him. Brian Kelly went 4-8 at Notre Dame. So is one of those eight? Could one of those be worse? I think the Northern Illinois loss has been completely and totally erased after what they've done. But that's just me. The Titans locking the top pick. You're afraid all the Shador talk that's about to happen. Mediocre quarterback at best. God bless you. It's pretty much a given that Sanders and Ward are the first two quarterbacks. Who do I guess is third? Also, how about Milroe? My guess is that Milroe was third. Somebody's going to fall in love with the athleticism. Late to the stream. Can someone give me the rundown of the rumors of Juice Wells returning? There's nothing that I could get myself for what it's worth. I know it's everywhere, and I decided to talk about it tonight because I've been asked about it a bunch, and I know it's out there on Twitter and in message boards and stuff. I have no idea if there's any validity to it. I'm not immediately dismissive of it because it does make sense. It certainly makes sense. This isn't like the Judkins thing last year. That was dumb. This isn't dumb. It makes sense. I just don't know the validity to it. That's really kind of where we are right now. It's everywhere, but I don't know if there's any, pun intended, juice behind it. So. Ohio State's winning it all. None of these other three teams have a chance in hell. I actually disagree with you. I think they have a chance. Will Howard's just going to have to come back down to earth. He's throwing deep balls in a way that I don't think is sustainable, despite having those two receivers. If he has an off day, I don't foresee Texas being able to stop them, though. I think Texas is soft. Maybe the Deion Smith miracle will happen this offseason. I would not bet on it. I would not bet on that. But I got to run, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, I really appreciate you. We will be back. So what we'll do is we'll be back on Tuesday, and then we will replace Thursday with Wednesday. So we'll go Tuesday and then post-game Wednesday. Whenever that game ends on Wednesday, we'll go live. And then Thursday's the college football playoff night. So we'll just move Thursdays up to Wednesday, and that'll be how we go about the rest of this week. So see y'all on Tuesday. Thank you for tuning in. Appreciate all of you, and we'll talk to you on Tuesday.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.